Haxamea once again. We are here in the wilderness, praise Yahweh, for Sukkot 2025. The first message I am given today is called Preparing the Bride in the Wilderness. So the Bible says to give meat in due season, and here we are at Sukkot, and here we are in the wilderness, and here we are, Yahweh starting to separate the wheat from the chaff. So I think it's a great message to go over here. Before I start, I just want to go over the drawing, and I want to thank Sister Deer for doing that drawing. Where is she? Very good. Very, very nice that you did here. So we see here, you know, many are called, few are chosen, few are faithful. Yeah, if you could just turn that, we could see it. And what happens is we have the outer court, right? So after baptism, we become spiritual Israelites, you know, and we're able to go into the outer court. Because remember, even in the outer court in Israel, only Israelites were allowed to be in the outer court. You know, a Gentile could not come in. And if you remember in the book of Acts, when the Apostle Paul, they thought that he brought a Gentile into the temple area and they were beating him up. So we start out in the outer court. That's where we all start out. You know, that's where it goes. And then as we're growing, we become priests and we go to the inner court, because you had to be a priest to go inside the sanctuary of Yahweh. That's the second step. And that's what we're training for. We're training to be kings and priests in the kingdom. And then, of course, though, we don't want to stay in the inner court. We want to get to the Holy of Holies. That's the third step there. And the Holy of Holies is basically being kadosh. It's being in the presence of Yahweh. And that's our goal here. So as believers, this is from the time you become a believer, you should be thinking about this. You know, when we're having a plan of action, you know, that plan of action should be moving from the outer court into the inner court, into the Holy of Holies. And, you know, it's amazing sometimes that you could see people that have been around 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, sometimes even 25 years or more, and they've never moved from the outer court. You know, they've just basically, you know, get baptized, and then that's where basically they stay. So I want to talk about that today. I want to talk about preparing to be faithful in coming out of the system. And Yahweh preparing, like I said, he's separating right now the wheat from the chaff. And those not preparing are going to reap what they sow. So in the end time, like it talks about, you know, you see in the Bible sometimes where, you know, like in the book of Habakkuk, you know, like he'll say, you know, Heavenly Father, here it is, these people are sinning and they're prospering and what's going on. But in the end time, like Yahweh says, the thief and the sinner will be cut off in one day. So we're living in a time, we're living in real time now, like I said. Whereas before, you know, it was a shadow, but now this is the real wilderness. It's not, you know, in 1,000 years from now, the same way we read the book of Exodus and we're looking at the children of Israel in the wilderness and we're looking at examples from them, in 1,000 years from now, whatever Yahweh has, we're that example. We are the real end time wilderness. You know, this is it. In a few years, Yeshua will be here and the kingdom will be here. There's nothing more to do except prepare ourselves. We're in the last of the last, you know. So we got to realize that. And that's why in the end time, it basically says, you know, again, your free will isn't being taken away. Nobody's going to twist your arm, but you will reap what you sow. And that's why sometimes, like, when people even ask me, you know, there's an Elohim in heaven. How can he allow this? And how can he allow word? It's like, how can he allow it? You're doing it. You're choosing that. Mankind is choosing war. Mankind is choosing the rebellious. Mankind is choosing to go against Yahweh. The only thing he's not doing, which he never did, was take our free will away. He's allowing us to learn and reap what we sow. But it's magnified as we get into the end time. So Revelation 7 says, and after these things I saw four cherubs standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that wind should not blow on the earth, nor the sea, nor every tree. And I saw another cherub coming up from the rising of the sun, the east, right where we are, having a seal of the living Elohim. And he cried with a great voice to the four cherubs to whom it was given to them to harm the earth and the sea, saying, do not harm the earth, nor the sea, nor the trees, until we seal the servants of our Elohim on their foreheads. And we know from Yahweh's word, right? You know, what does it say? Your forehead, your mind is what you think, and your hands are what you do. And it's the same with the mark of the beast, you know, that the people today, when you're on the internet all the time and you're on those phones all the time, it's brainwashing you. It's literally programming your mind. And then, of course, what you're going to do is going to be things of the way of the world. And it will change you. You know, the same way, when you read your Bible every day, it transforms you into a different person. Because whatever you're putting in is what's going to come out, just like a computer. And today, we have to make sure, because like I said, with the way the world is, you know, Yahweh says, this is the worst time man has ever known and ever will know, and we're living it. You know, we're living in that. We see it. And he says, I heard the number of those having been sealed, 144,000, having been sealed out of every tribe of the sons of Israel. And then after that, it tells 12,000 from Judah, 12,000 from Zebulun, every tribe having 12,000 sealed from that point. So there's 144,000, right? And they're from all over the earth. They're from everywhere. These are the first fruits of the believers in the end time. Go to Revelation 12. Verse 1, a great sign was seen in the heavens, a woman having been clothed with the sun, and the moon was underneath her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars, and having bathed in the womb, she cried, being in labor and having birth pains to deliver. And I was going over this last night. This sign happened a second time, September 17th, 2023, but it happened the first time when Yeshua was born. It was literally the Star of Bethlehem. Ernest Martin's book, The Star That Astonished the World, is an amazing book that is the proof of this. And a matter of fact, because it's not a religious book, it's a scientific book, more than 500 planetariums around the world have changed the birth of Yeshua from December 25th because of that book. Because it's a really good book scientifically, it goes into it. And then it says, and another sign was seen in the heavens, behold, a great red dragon, and we know Drago, the constellation of the dragon is up there also, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his head were 7 crowns, and his tail drew the third part of the stars of the heaven, you know, the cherubs that became demons, and the dragon stood before the woman being about to bear, so that when she bears, she might devour her child. And I always say, you know, because in this world, it does take faith, right, to be a believer. And we do see Yahweh in ways. We see him through his word. He speaks to our mind sometimes. You know, we see him through things that happen. But nobody, no human being, has seen Yahweh face to face. You can't see Yahweh face to face and live. So I can understand why people that don't have faith would doubt and why they wouldn't believe. Because you can't live, I've given sermons on this, you can't live in eternity and you can't live in time at the same time. And they're total opposite of each other. And time really doesn't exist. It's something that was created. It's a piece of eternity that was created for this time. So when you're thinking in time, you can't think in eternity at the same time. And that's why people say, who created Yahweh? Because they're living in time. They're not living in eternity. They're living in a linear. So I can understand that. It makes sense to me why people would doubt Yahweh, why they would not understand it. But how could a cherub? How could a cherub, you know, Lucifer, the guarding cherub, you know, hello, that was at his throne. He was one of the cherubs guarding the Ark of the Covenant. How on earth can he turn and come against Yahweh and take a third of the cherubs with him? I think that scares me more than anything. Because when I hear that, my heart is pounding, thinking, what chance do I have? You know, how on earth can that happen? But if that doesn't scare us to make sure, wow, I am not bringing anything in my life. I am going to be that horse with the siders, the binders. I am only going to follow because I know I can be deceived. I know it. I've been deceived in my life before. And every one of us has been deceived. And many of us, even in this room, are being deceived right now. And yet, we allow it every day. We allow it. You know? Yahweh took in our congregation, I think now it was almost 10 years ago, when we were studying the Amish, you know, the Amish experiment. And we're blessed today have a gentleman, a good friend of mine, that used to be part of the Amish. So if you want to know anything about the Amish, please talk to Brother Daniel back there. And I thought, wow, you know, once people see this and once they see the difference of the Amish and they see how they live, I know people will be coming out. But I can tell you now, 10 years later, as a congregation, we are way more worldly than we were 10 years ago. We really are. And as I travel to places, I'm shocked. I'm shocked to see. I'm shocked to see the youth. I'm shocked to see the brethren. And I'm shocked to see the elders, believe it or not. I'm almost ashamed I have to say this in a sermon, but I hope I shame some of our elders. I hope I really do. Because I've seen there where some of the elders right in front of me have those stupid phones and looking through it. And I'll tell you, I think the next time I'm just going to rip it out of somebody's hand and break it in front of them. Because I'm really up to here with it. How people are not changing. They're not. They're not changing. But you know what? Got to watch myself because I can only change myself. But the time is here. And we've wasted as a congregation a lot of time where we could be in a different place right now that we're not. We're really not. I praise Yahweh for the communities, you know, and they're having their struggles. But I say, I see the growth in the communities that I don't see in the other brethren. And it's almost to a point where I'm feeling now that it's getting to the point where it's like as I'm talking, it's like, that it's almost like they can't even hear my words anymore. And that gets scary when you get to that point, because that means you're almost fully brainwashed. And because brainwashing doesn't happen overnight, right? It takes time. The same way when you become a believer. And I've had people say, yeah, my family said we're being brainwashed. I said, hallelujah. Yahweh is washing our brain. Yes, he's washing the filth of Babylon out of our brain, and he's washing it and renewing it, right? And that's what we're going to talk about today, renewing our brain. But there's a lot of brethren on the other end that are not doing that, and they're allowing the brainwashing of Satan, the G.O.D. of this world, every day of their life. So where that's going to go, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to keep talking about it too much today or in the future, because I need to start focusing on the people that are really with the program, you know, and the people of change. So when we're looking at this, we see, right? And I'll go down to verse 6. The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place, it having been prepared from Elohim, that there they might nourish her 1,260 days, right? 1,260 days, roughly 3.5 years, if you don't have an intercalatory month, but that's for another story. But this is what it says there. So, this is a parallel of the congregation going to the wilderness in 360 AD. It's in the book, the Gates of Hell book. You can see it or read it in there. I'm going to continue in verse 7. And war occurred in heaven, Michael and his cherubs making war against the dragon, and the dragon and his cherubs made war. And this is something in the end time, scary, this galactic war that's going to go on in heaven. And I can only imagine what it's going to look like, you know, when from the earth as we're seeing this. But they did not have strength, nor yet was place found for them in heaven. And the great dragon, Satan, was cast out, the old serpent being called the devil and Satan. No doubt who he is. He deceiving the whole inhabitable world, right? Which means all of us to one degree or another have been deceived. And that's why I'm saying it should scare us that every minute we're in his society, we're taking that risk of being deceived more. He deceiving the whole inhabitable world was cast out into the earth, and his messengers were cast out with him. And I heard a great voice in heaven which said, now has come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of Elohim and the dominion of his Messiah, praise Yahweh. Because the accuser of our brethren is cast out, the one who accuses them day and night before Elohim. And that's why I said, if you have an accusing spirit and you're keep saying things about brethren, then you're on Satan's payroll, basically. You know, because he is the accuser of the brethren, and like I said, he does it day and night. And they overcame him. How did they overcome him? Very important. Because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony. How good is our testimony? Right? Really depends on whether we're going to be in the kingdom or not. How good is our testimony? How good is our word? And they did not love their soul even unto death. Because of this, be glad the heavens and those dwelling in them. Woe to the ones dwelling on the earth and the sea, because the devil came down to you having great anger, knowing his time is short. Right? So this is where once we see some of these things happen, we know, boom, there's only 1,260 days, or there's, you know, whatever. So this is as this is happening. And the dragon saw that he was guest of the earth, and he pursued the woman who bore the man child. So this happens in the end time. There's no doubt about it. We're living in that time. We're waiting for a few of these things to happen. And like I said, only Yahweh knows the times and the seasons, but we're not in the beginning of this process. We're in the last stages of the process. Verse 14, and two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. I've had a lot of people tell me, well, you know, Yahweh can just protect anybody where they are. Of course he can. He can protect you anywhere. There's no doubt about that. I don't doubt that. But there is a specific place for a certain group of people in the end time, where she is nourished there for a time and times and half the time from a certain space. That could be also 3.5 years, but it could be not. Times can also be holy days. So it could be a holy day, holy days, and half to the next holy day season. So it can be as little as 7 months, or it could be as much as 3.5 years. Just depends on how it's being translated there. And the serpent screwed water out of his mouth like a river after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried off by the river. And the earth helped the woman. So some kind of flood is coming up. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river which the dragon threw out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged over the woman and went away to make war with the rest of her seed, those keeping the commandments of Yahweh and having the testimony of Yeshua Messiah. Now, I do have to say, I see this a tiny bit different than I used to see it. Because on one sense, you could say, right, that the woman going to her place is the 144,000. Very well could be. And who does he come after? He comes after the rest of her seed, the Laodiceans that don't go. But on the other end, as I'm looking at this and I'm reading it, when you read about the Laodiceans in Genesis 3, it doesn't seem to be Yahweh's pattern that he would say, and those are the ones that are keeping the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yeshua. That doesn't sound like Laodiceans. That actually sounds more like Philadelphians. So when we're looking at this, there is a good possibility, you know, because it never says that all the 144,000 go to that place. It could be a remnant of the 144,000. So we don't know how many people. We're going to see from the message it would have given before, definitely Selah is the place that Yahweh says. Will there be 144,000 people here? Only Yahweh knows. But there's a chance it could be a remnant of them. And yes, Yahweh can have some of those people around the world that he doesn't take. He might take people, you know, like I said, he could translate people. It's something we don't have to worry about, because if you're accounted worthy to be there, you're going to be there. You don't have to do anything. Like I said, with Babylon, you have to come out of the system. Whether that's physically leaving the land of Babylon as an American, or it's leaving the system of Babylon, which every believer in the world has to do. But literally, we have to do that, and Yahweh does the rest. So we really don't have to worry about it, but it could be either way. It could be literally 144,000 in the place, or it could be a remnant of that, and the rest of them are, you know, wherever they are. Because we do know when Yeshua returns, the cherubs come from the four corners of the earth to gather the elect, but we do know there's Laodiceans that do change and come into the truth. So we'll see. We'll see that. Revelation 6 in verse 9, what happens then after this, right after this? And this is why we need to be prepared, because as soon as that happens, wow, things are going to change really fast. And when you look at the end time, one thing that it says over and over is that it happens quickly. It's not like the 70 years prophecy of Daniel. It's not going to be for hundreds and hundreds of years. And specifically, as we get into that end time, you know, in the day of Yahweh, the day of Yahweh could be a year. And as I'm looking at it now, the day of Yahweh literally could be one day, you know, but things are going to happen quick in the end time. It certainly is not, you know, like I said, decades and decades and decades. You know, we know it's not more than 3.5 years, actually. And that's from the beginning of when the beast power is set up. But Revelation 6 in verse 9 says, "And when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those having been slain for the word of Yahweh, for the witness they had. And they cried with a great voice, saying, Until when, holy and true Master Yahweh, do you not judge and make vengeance for our blood from those dwelling on the earth?" So these are all the martyrs from the beginning of the congregation till today. And they're saying to Yahweh, you know, when are you going to take vengeance on us? And look what he says. "And there was given to each one a white robe," right? As we're going to see, that's what we need for the wedding supper. "And it was said to them that they should rest for a little while until it might be fulfilled also the number of their fellow servants and their brethren, those being about to be killed, even as they." So there is a great martyrism that's coming, right? But to the true believer, the faithful one, it don't matter, you know, because they're ready to give their life unto death. Revelation 14. And this is when Yeshua returns, right? And where is he going to take the 144,000 at that point? To Mount Zion. Chapter 14, "And I saw and behold the Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him were 144,000 with the name of his Father having been written on their forehead." When people ask me, is it really important the name of Yahweh? This is one of the first scriptures I go to. Because at the end time, if you're going to be accounted to be a first fruit, of course, it's the most important thing. "And I heard the sound of heaven as the sound of many waters, and as the sound of great thunder. And I heard the sound of harpers harping on their harps, and they sing as a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one was able to learn the song except 144,000, those having been redeemed from the earth." So there must be a lot of ties in that number. Because you got to know the song. "These are the ones," now who are they? "These are the ones that have not become defiled," right? They're not part of commercial Babylon, "for they're pure. These are the ones following the Lamb wherever he may go. These were redeemed from among men," right? Because we're all part of the system, but they've come out of it. "They're redeemed from among men, being the first fruits to Yahweh and to the Lamb. And no decoy was found in their mouth, for they are unmarked before the throne of Yahweh." They're unmarked. They're not, you know, they are not part of commercial Babylon. They're not part of that system. They're completely out of it. So this is preparation for the wedding supper in heaven, because that's where they're going to go from here. They're going to go up to heaven to the wedding supper with the Father. And my question is, will you be one of the first fruit bride to Yeshua? You know, will you be? Will you be? And right now, life is a test, and Yahweh is testing us. He wants to see how much we want it, because I say to people, you know, I can guarantee you, when the kingdom comes, there will not be one rebellious person in the kingdom. There will not be one self-righteous person in the kingdom. There will not be one person seeking his own will in the kingdom. But everyone in the kingdom will want to serve others. Everyone will want to be under Yahweh's judicial order. And it's a choice. It's a personal choice we have to make. So are we making that choice every day of our life? Let's go to Song of Solomon, chapter 2. So let's get into now, what is this preparing of the bride? What has to be done to be that first fruit in the bride of Messiah? Song of Solomon 2, in verse 11. It says, "For behold, the winter has passed, the rain has passed, it goes to itself." So Song of Solomon, it's not a very long book, right? It is only 8 little chapters that are in here. And the whole book, like if you look at the book of Isaiah is almost like a Bible within a Bible. It has all different kinds of things. It has history of Israel. It has a lot of messianic prophecies. From Isaiah 40 all the way till the end is only about the kingdom and the Messiah. Prophecies of the Messiah coming, prophecies of the kingdom coming. So there's all different things in the book of Isaiah. But here, the Song of Solomon, it's a very simple book. It is a love letter from Yeshua to his bride. That's what it is, a love letter from Yeshua to his bride. It is the most special to me book in the Bible because of that. And there is not a book in the Bible where you will get more intimacy of Yeshua talking to his bride than Song of Solomon. So here in verse 2:11, it's giving us kind of like a parameter of timing, right? So when does this happen with the bride? "For behold, the winter's past, the rain is past, it goes to itself." This is happening around Passover time. You know, that's what happens. When the rain is stopped and winter is past, it's Passover. So it's around Passover time. And he's saying, you know, this is the time where the bride is leaving to the wilderness. But only the people that are 100% committed are going, right? Then Luke 14, we go to Luke 14, verse 26 and 27. He says, if anyone comes to me and does not love less than me, his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brothers and sisters, and beside even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. So it's interesting if Yeshua just said, if anyone comes to me and puts anything before me, he can't be my disciple. But he goes into specifically the things that probably 95% of people would put before him, right? It's just a natural thing. It's a natural thing to put, you know, father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, even our own life, you know, because we are selfish by nature. But he says, if you do this, you cannot be my disciple. And whoever, excuse me, whoever does not bear his torture stake and come after me, he cannot be my disciple. So what is the torture stake in your life? What is it? You know, is it coming from Babylon? You know, is it having love of money? Is it having a covetous spirit? Everybody has something. And that's what he says. You've got to bear your torture stake and overcome it. And then in verse 33, so then every one of you who does not forsake all his possessions is not able to be my disciple. Unless if there's anything in your life that you're putting before him, right? A job, a land, possessions, a house. I've heard people literally tell me for years, you know, with Babylon, that they could never leave their house. So what is it? What is it in our life? It's something different for everybody that we're putting. And you know what? I'm sure a lot of us would say, oh no, I don't put anything before Yahweh. But if we're not, then we would be studying our Bible and doing the work and bearing fruit. We are putting things before Yahweh. We're just not admitting it. And you know what that means? If you're putting things before Yahweh and you're not seeing it, that means you're on Laodicea. That you think you're rich and increased with goods and need of nothing, and you're poor, you're blind, you're miserable and naked. So you better start really thinking and praying and asking Yahweh to show you, what am I putting before you? Because, you know, there's 24 hours in a day. I'm going to get into this in another message. But minimum-wise, you have to give him 2.4 hours a day just in tithe. You have to tithe. There's 24 hours in a day. 10% of that is 2.4 hours in tithe to Yahweh. And I say, prayer and Bible study is not for Yahweh. That's for you. That's your blessing. You're studying the Bible and you're praying. That's your blessing. You know, are you giving Yahweh minimum? And like it says in Luke, you know, when you do the minimum, consider yourself unprofitable. You're only doing what you're commanded to. But we're commanded to do that. And are we even doing what we're commanded to? So we want to make sure that we're thinking to ourselves, you know, what are we putting before Yahweh in our life? Our bridegroom, right? What are we putting before the bridegroom? Back to Song of Solomon, chapter 1, in verse 8. He says, if you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women. Wow, can you imagine? That's what Yeshua is saying to us. He's calling us most beautiful. And his definition and idea of beauty is a little bit different than the world definition. Because beauty means functional. You know, his bride is a functional bride. And we're going to see this in a little bit as we go into some of these scriptures. It's a bride that's functional. It's a bride that's producing, right? So he says, if you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women, go in the footsteps of the flock and feed your kids beside the tents of the shepherd. So he's saying, you know, stay close to the body. You know, if you don't know yet, then learn it, right? Learn it. Where are you going to learn it? You're going to learn it from the elders in the congregation. You're going to learn it by being part of the body of Messiah. And that's why anybody that's out there that says, I'll never follow a man, and they want to be all on themselves, don't even give them a breath of your time. It ain't worth it at this point. Because you're not going to change them. And those are the people that are 100% loyal to saints. Because very clearly, Yahweh is a family. And this is the number one thing I try to share with people that are getting baptized. You know, you're joining a family, and there's responsibility in a family. And if you basically join that family and run off on your own, you know, then you're not really joining a family at that point. So, thank you. You have to stay close to the flock. To be productive in the end time, and you got to leave the security of commercial Babylon. And why are a lot of people thinking this way? And it's not only in Western society, but it's mostly in Western society. It's mostly because of the false security that commercial Babylon gives people. And they think because of money and mammon and job and whatever, they don't need anybody. And they can set up their own little kingdoms. But it doesn't work that way. That's not the bride of Messiah. Verse 5 there in chapter 1 says, I am black but comely. I always like to read the scripture when I'm in Africa. Was I tell, what color is the bride? Right? I am black but comely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, right? And those are coming from the sheep, you know, the goats rather. You know, the tents are made with goat hair, and that's what it's talking about. Like the curtains of Solomon. Do not look at me that I am black, that the sun has looked on me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. So what are we seeing here? We're seeing that the vineyard is a sign of protection. We see that in Isaiah 5. The vineyard is a sign of protection. But it's also a sign of productivity. So how productive are we being in Yahweh's vineyard? And in the New Testament, you know, Yeshua goes into literal parallels and parables of the vineyard, right, that we see. But the bride is to be productive for the love of the bridegroom. So she's not doing it for herself. She's not doing it because, you know, she fears losing out on her salvation or whatever. She's doing it simply for the love of the bridegroom. That's why I say Song of Solomon is such a beautiful love story. A beautiful love story of Yeshua and his bride. So we also see it's kind of like a parallel that Yahweh's making, like where the, you know, we know that in the end time the bride has to make her garment white, right, and spotless, but she comes in black and comely. So it's like that, it's that opposite showing. So when the woman comes in the wilderness in the end time, she's not ready. She's not, but she understands she's got to change, and that's the key. That she's not just letting years and years and years go by and doing nothing. That she's realizing, I have to do something different. So she's going to the vineyard for protection, but also productivity. That's where the work of what Yahweh is, and that's where she's going. So let's go to Proverbs now. I usually go here right for ladies' classes, you know, the Proverbs 31 woman. But today I really want to talk about the Proverbs 31 bride. Here's an article I had years ago in one of the Good News magazines, from the Good News magazine, in the Remnants Walk, that was called the Proverbs 31 husband. It's a really great article. Really, really like that article. Because Proverbs 31... yes, it is great for ladies in the congregation and to share with them what they can attain for. But it's really for the men, too. It's for all of us. Because Proverbs 31 is the kind of bride that Yeshua wants when he returns. So let's go there, starting verse 10. And he says, who can find a bride of virtue? For her value is far above jewels. The heart of her husband, right, who's the husband, Yeshua, trusts in her, so that he has no lack of gain. Does Yeshua trust in you? And, you know, I say that sometimes if you're thinking in your life that you're wondering, you know, what your spiritual gifts are, or you're wondering how to bear fruit, you know, the thing is, maybe you're not bearing fruit because maybe Yeshua can't trust you to bear fruit. You know, because it takes a lot of responsibility on his part to give to you. And it's one of the things that I've really, he's been showing me the last year, and I pray now every single day. One of the things I pray to Yahweh is I say, thank you, Father, that you trust me enough to do this. You know, you're always thinking of yourself and what I need to change and how I can be better and this and that. But then it's like it hits you that, wow, I wouldn't be sitting in this chair if Yahweh didn't trust me. So we should be thanking him and trying to build that trust with him also. Because in the end, what does he say? The harvest is ready, the workers are few. It's not that Yahweh only needs one or two or three leaders. Like I said, the mentoring program, he needs all of us. And then some. You know, you got 8 billion people in the world out there. He needs everybody. And the problem is, it's almost like the wedding feast. The invitations are going out, and everybody's busy doing their own thing. You know, nobody has the time for the work of Yahweh. But that's the key here when you think about it, right? Think about just in this world. You know, if you're a man, think about yourself as the husband and think about your wife. How would you feel if, here it is, you had a business or, you know, you have a family with kids, and your wife was basically out there working a job every day somewhere else. You know, you barely ever saw her. She didn't take care of your kids. She didn't produce any fruit. And then she's going to come and say, yeah, I want all the inheritance. As men, we're doing the same thing. Because we are the bride as much as the women are the bride. And if our whole life is basically doing for us, and we're not doing the work of Yahweh, we are not qualifying to be the bride of Messiah. It's that simple. We got to be bearing fruit. And again, it doesn't take away from our family responsibilities. You know, we should be able to do one without undoing the other, like Yeshua told the Pharisees in Matthew 23. But I think as men, we need to be reading Proverbs 31 a little bit more. We need to be looking at this. So the heart of Yeshua trusts in her so that he has no lack of gain. She deals good with him and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax, and she works with her hands with delight, right? So she's functional. She's working with her hands. She's producing. She's making. The way that Yahweh is a creator. And he loves when we use creative ability. And I see that a lot in the congregation. Praise Yahweh for that. I see so much, especially with the ladies, but with the men also, with creativeness and being able to make and create and produce. And I think that's wonderful. She's like the merchant ships. She brings in her food from afar, right? Like we saw with COVID, you know, where those supermarkets say you can't come in unless you have your iPhone. We're going to have to think of something else. We already did, you know, because we don't have one of those phones. So are we thinking of how to bring in our food on the merchant ships from afar? And we had to figure. We were even bartering, even during Shemitah year. Find small farms and figure out, okay, I can barter this with you, and I'll take this, and go to another one. I'll take your cabbage, and you take my broccoli, you know, whatever it may be. So she's like the merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is still night, right? Early riser. And gives game to her household and a portion to her maiden. So you could show this scripture to the Seventh-day Adventists that are vegetarians. Can't keep Passover in the Bible if you're vegetarian. Right, there's no vegetarian lamb that you could have. But this is what she's doing. She's giving game. She's giving meat. She's given to her household and a portion to her maidens. She's examined the field and takes it and plants a vineyard from the fruit of her hands. Right, so she's very functional. She's working with the dirt. She's girded her loins with strength and has made her arms strong. Right, so are we doing that as men and ladies? You know, are we showing strength in our life with our families, with our husbands, our wives, our children, our neighbors, our brethren? And our footnote says, strength comes internally from knowing what one wants to accomplish and externally from hard work and exercise. She tastes whether her gain is good. Her lamp is not put out by night. She has sent forth her hands on the distaff, and her hands have held to the spindle. So she has many talents, and one is knowing how to make her own clothes for her family. And I think a lot of brethren in our congregation do that. Praise Yahweh for that. Nothing wrong with going to secondhand stores. We do that a lot too, getting things for $1, $2, $3, some good stuff. But it's also great to make it. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. Praise Yahweh. She gives herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is fine linen and purple, right? So it's not, you know, the cheap, Walmart specials and all this stuff, but she's using quality stuff. Her husband is known in the gates. when he sits with the elders of the land, right? She makes fine linen garments and sells and delivers belts to the merchants, right? She's got a really a mind for this. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she shall rejoice at the day to come. And the note says, the Proverbs 31 woman has no anxiety for the future because she's living a righteous life and can only have anticipation of her reward in the kingdom to come. So this is men and women, you know, for all of us. Is strength and dignity, are they our clothing? Or are we compromisers? It's the message I'm going to give during the feast here. Do you have a compromising spirit? You know, do we say we believe in one thing and then we're always compromising what we believe? She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the law of kindness is in her tongue. She watches the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness, right? So the one thing is she is bearing fruit. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also praises her, right? Yeshua is our husband. Is Yeshua praising our works? You know, what are our works? What are we doing for the kingdom every day of our life? You know, how much fruit are we bearing for the kingdom? And that's what Proverbs 31 is all about. Yes, ladies can take that in physical relationships. It's great as a foundation, right? Because the physical comes before the spiritual. But Proverbs 31 primarily is for Yeshua and his bride. Let's go back to Song of Solomon. Chapter 2, verse 13 and 14. So where is the bride taken? Where is this place that Song of Solomon talks about? It says, the fig tree spices her unripe figs, and the vines give a fragrance by the blossom. Arise, my love, come, my beautiful one, and come yourself, right? So it was something in Church of God, because when I was in Church of God, they believed there was a fleeing in the end time. And actually, it was really interesting because they had a very good relationship with King Hussein. And King Hussein had agreed to let more than 100,000 people from Church of God come here. Now, they thought it was going to be Petra to the south where they were going. They didn't know about Salem. That was something Yahweh didn't show them. But it was really interesting in those days that in Church of God, we all thought that we were coming somewhere. But look what he says, because people would have unconverted children that weren't following the truth, and they would think they're all going to come, unconverted spouses. But he says, no, come yourself. I can tell you that much, 144,000 are the 144,000 converted ones. They're not unconverted relatives, you know. So when you come, arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come yourself. Come yourself. And where are you going to? Oh, my dove. In the refuge of Selah. In the refuge of Selah. In the secrecy of the steep place. And Selah is a pretty steep place. He says, let me see your form. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet and your form is beautiful. And our note here says, the bride is hidden in the rocks. That's where Yahweh has it. And we know at the top of Selah, they have all kinds of caves up there where people actually have lived in the past. Chapter 3 and verse 6, he says, who is this who comes up out of the wilderness like columns of smoke, sacrificing his incense, myrrh, and frankincense from all the powders of the merchants? Who is this who comes up out of the wilderness like columns of smoke? So where is the woman coming the end time? In the wilderness. She's not in commercial Babylon. She's not in the cities, you know. She is in the wilderness, and that time has started. When will Yeshua return? You know, is it going to be 40 years in the wilderness? I doubt that very much. But one thing is certain, it's already started. The wilderness has already started. And I hope everybody in this room has started their wilderness journey one way or another. You know? Because if not, you are falling behind. Ephesians 5 and verse 22. He says, wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as to our master. And I say, as we're going to see, this is talking about Yeshua the congregation. This is talking about men as well as women. And, you know, it's interesting because through my years in my life as a believer, 40 years in the faith, I've seen a lot of dominating men who had controlling spirits that would never follow a man, they say, but when it came to their family, wow, they were the most abusive, controlling as you can. but they would never follow anybody. And when we're looking at this here, wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as to our master. We're talking about men and women. We're talking about the bride and Messiah. So men have to learn to submit as well as women have to learn to submit. Because like I said, in the kingdom, there will not even be one person who is unsubmissive. Because that's a selfish spirit. It's not the spirit of Yahweh. So, like he said, wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as to your master, because a husband is the head of the wife, as also Messiah is the head of the congregation, and he's the savior of the body. So it all goes back to Yeshua, and if we can't submit to an earthly person now, you'll never submit to Yeshua. Because Yeshua put those people in there. Ephesians 4 in verse 11, Yeshua put pastors and prophets and teachers. He set it up that way, the system. So if we're not following it, we're not following him. But even as the congregation is subject to Messiah, so also the wives to their own husbands in everything. And who is our husband? Who is my husband? Yeshua. So am I being submissive to Yeshua in everything? Is Yeshua the first work in my life? You know, like I said, as husbands, just think about it. Think about if your wife came to you today and said, hey, I just got this great job offer, and I'm going to be working away from the house about 10 hours a day, and you're going to have to do all this and do all that and take care of the kids. How would we feel? And as men, are we doing the same thing to Yeshua? When we're supposed to be the bride of Messiah, are we finding everything else in our life, but we're not doing his work whatsoever? Verse 25. Husbands, love your wives as Messiah loved the congregation and gave himself up on its behalf, that he might sanctify it, cleansing it by the washing of the water of the word, that he might present it to himself as the glorious congregation, not having stain or wrinkle. And that's what we need to do. Or any such things, but it be holy and without blemish. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the stains, the wrinkles, and the blemishes out of our life. That's the key, what we have to do. As a bride is serving the bridegroom, Yeshua, truly first thing in our life. Is that the first thing in our life? But that's why I say sometimes I think it's easier for the ladies because they're already in that position as the wife. So it's easier to set it up. But for the men, because we're not in that position, you really got to change your mindset to that. Matthew 6, in verse 19 to 21, he says, do not treasure up for you treasures on the earth where moth and rust come to corrupt and where thieves dig through and steal. But treasure up for you treasure in heaven where neither moth nor rust cause to corrupt and where thieves do not dig through and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. No one is able to serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and he will love the other, or he will cleave to the one and he will despise the other. You are not able to serve Yahweh and wealth. Right? So men and women, do we have two masters in our life? Is Yeshua our master? Are we being faithful to him? Or do we have another master? Back to Song of Solomon, chapter 8. In verse 5, he says, who is this that comes up from the wilderness leaning on her beloved? So it's not just a matter of going into the wilderness, but it's leaning on Yeshua in the wilderness, right? And we know that phrase. If it's in old languages the same way, but in English, when you say to somebody, hey, I know you're going through a rough time, you know, you could lean on me. Meaningly, you're helping to support that person. So that's what's happening here. Who is this that comes up on the wilderness leaning on her beloved? Because that's the only way to get through the wilderness. Remember what I read in Revelation 12, right? What made those people be overcoming? It's the blood of the Lamb. You know, are we leaning on Yeshua? Remember what Yeshua said, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Come all to me, all you who are heavy laden. Are we coming to him? Are we putting our burdens and our cares upon him? Our study note there. Says, the bride, although unprepared and not ready in chapter 1, now comes out of the wilderness ready for the bridegroom and the wedding supper. So she goes in, right? Black and comely, she comes out ready from leaning on her beloved. Song of Solomon, chapter 4. Such a beautiful chapter. I'm going to read the first 7 verses, and this is Yeshua speaking to us as his bridegroom. He says, "Behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are as doves from behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats which lie down from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep which come up from the washing place, of which they all are bearing twins, and a bereaved one is not among them. Your lips are like a cord of scarlet, and your speech is becoming. Your temple are like a piece of pomegranate behind your veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built for an armory. 1,000 bucklers hang on it, all the shields of the mighty men. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle feeding among the lilies, until when the day blows and the shadows flee away, I myself will go to the mountain of myrrh, into the hills of frankincense. You are all beautiful, my love. There is no blemish in you," right? Why is there no blemish? Because we're getting out every blemish, every spot and wrinkle. And like I said, we don't have forever. And I realized that during COVID, that for the Laodicean, for the people that are out there that really are not working on this, you know, like I said, when something happens, if there's a war somewhere or there's an earthquake or something, they get shaken up for about a day. But then as soon as it comes down, they go right back to their life. It's the real people of Yahweh. It's the real bride of Messiah that is working on this each and every day of their life. It's not a one-time emotional feeling. And I tell people that, you know, with baptism or whatever, you know, and there's people sometimes that they'll have a dream or something, and it could be from Yahweh, it could not be from Yahweh, you know, unconverted person, and then you hear and they'll tell you, you know, like, oh, I had this dream, and they think maybe that they're a prophet. And I try to throw some cold water on that, because if you're coming into the faith thinking you're something, you're never going to come into the faith. The whole point of coming into the faith is realizing you're nothing. You're nothing. That Yahweh is everything and you're nothing. And it doesn't mean that Yahweh doesn't have prophets and doesn't give people dreams and visions in the end time. He actually gives a lot of that. But what it means is he could give a recording in a dream and vision, or he could say something out of my mouth. It doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make me any more different than anybody else, or make me have to change any less than anybody else. So we want to make sure of that. We want to make sure that we are giving all the glory to Yahweh, and it's not an emotional experience, but we are working on this every day of our life out of love, because we love him, because he is our bridegroom, and that's where we're at. So what a beautiful, you know, chapter 4 is there, and he says his bride is without blemish. Revelation 19. Verse 7 through 9, "Let us rejoice and let us exalt, and we will give glory to him, because the marriage of the Lamb came, and his wife prepared herself. And it was given to her that she should be clothed in fine linen, pure and bright, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. And he said to me, 'Write, blessed are the ones having been called to the marriage supper of the Lamb.' And he said to me, 'These words of Yahweh are true.'" Praise Yahweh for that, right? The fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. Are we building that fine linen? The bride made herself ready in the wilderness. Song of Solomon, chapter 6, verse 9. He says, "But my dove, my perfect one, is Ikad." My perfect one, right? She's made herself ready in the wilderness, and she is Ikad, which means the bride is united. The bride is united. We are one bride, right? Like Yahweh says in John 17, "I and you and me and us and them, make them ikad, make them united as we are united." So the bride is united in the end time. In perfect, the first fruit of Yahweh. Joel 2 in chapter 16. Joel 2 in chapter 16 says, "Gather the people, sanctify the congregation, gather the elders, gather the children, gather those who suck the breasts. Let the bridegroom go out of his room, and the bride out of her bridal chamber." So I've been reading Joel a lot, because we're living in these days, and we're very close to this false peace deal coming, Palestinian state being made, which brings the day of Yahweh. We're on the verge of all this. And as this is happening, look what he says. Gather the people, gather the congregation, gather the elders, gather the children, and those who suck the breast. Let the bridegroom go out of his room, right? Yeshua is coming out of his room, and the bride out of her bridal chamber, right? But she can only come out of the bridal chamber once she's ready. You're never going to see a bride coming out to go to the wedding in ripped clothes and her hair isn't done. And that's why now is the time. Now is the time to prepare. Now is the time to get ready. Isaiah 62. Another beautiful chapter in the Bible. Isaiah 62, starting in verse 1. For Zion's sake, I will not be silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest, until her righteousness goes forth as brightness, and Yeshua as a burning torch. And nations will see your righteousness, and the kings your glory. And you will be called by a new name, which the mouth of Yahweh will name. Wow, okay, imagine that. Yahweh giving us a new name. And you also shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of Yahweh, and a royal headdress in the hand of your Elohim. You no longer will be called forsaken, nor shall your land any more be called desolate. But you shall be called Hephzibah. My delight is in her, and your land, Beulah, married. For Yahweh delights in you, and your land is married. For as a young man marries a virgin, so shall your sons marry you. And as a bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so your Elohim shall rejoice over you. I have set watchmen on your walls, O Jerusalem, and all the day and all the night they shall not always be silent. You who remember Yahweh, keep not silent. I know I am one of those watchmen. That's why I keep taunting you over and over and over, because it's part of my job. I have to do it day and night. I can't be silent. And give him no rest until he sets up and makes Jerusalem a praise in all the earth. Yahweh is sworn by his right hand. Who is the right hand of Yahweh? Yeshua. And by the might of his arm, surely I will no longer give your grain as food to your enemies. And the sons of the stranger shall not drink your new wine for which they have labored. But those who have gathered it will eat it and praise Yahweh, and they who have collected it will drink it in my holy courts. Pass through the gates. Prepare the way of the people. Raise up the highway. Clear it from the stones. Lift up a banner over the people, right? This means the Messiah is coming. And what does it say? Behold, Yahweh has made it heard to the end of the earth. Tell the daughter of Zion, behold, Yeshua comes. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. And they will be called the holy people, the redeemed of Yahweh. And to you it shall be called sought out, a city not forsaken. Wow. What a powerful chapter that is. The bride of Messiah being returned at Yeshua's return. Matthew 16 and verse 24. Matthew 16 and verse 24. He says, then Yeshua said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, and let him bear his torch or stake, and let him follow me. For whoever may desire to save his life will lose it, but whoever may lose his life for my sake will find it. For what will a man be benefited if he should gain the whole world, but forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For it is necessary for the Son of Man to come in the glory of his Father, and then with his holy cherubs he will reward each man according to his work. No work, no reward. So this is what it's about. We will be rewarded according to our faithfulness in bearing fruit. Last scripture is Revelation 22. Revelation 22 and verse 12. He says, and behold, I'm coming soon, and my reward is with me to give to each according to his work. So Revelation is a really, really interesting book because it's written in real time, right? So it's like it's the vision is being seen 2,000 years before it actually happened. But now we're living in that book. And once the book is open, which the book of Revelation is open, some things have already happened in Revelation. Once it starts, this is what he's saying. Behold, I'm coming soon, and my reward is with me to give each according to his work. Drop down to verse 16 and 17. And then verse 20. I, Yeshua, sent my cherub to testify these things to you over the congregations. I am the root and the offspring of David, and the bright and the morning star. So that's, to Jewish people, that's always what they think of, that the Messiah is the son of David, which he is. And that's what he's saying he is, the offshoot and root of David. And the spirit and the bride say, come. And the one hearing, let him say, come. And the one thirsting, let him come. And the one desiring, let him take of the water of life freely. Praise Yahweh, the living water, like we said. And verse 20, the one testifying these things says, yes, I am coming quickly. Amen. Yes, come, Master Yeshua. So he is on his way. Yeshua is coming out of the bride chamber, and the bride is getting ready to come out of her chamber. The spirit of the bride says, come. But the Laodicean does not want to because he's too much part of commercial Babylon. And it's sad to see that. You know, like I said, during COVID, were people wanting change? Nope. All you heard over and over and over, not necessarily from brethren, but from the world, is we just want things to go back to normal. And like I said, if there's one thing this world is, it's not normal. This world is not normal. They don't understand what normal is. But that's what they're looking for. So we have to serve the bridegroom. Being the actual bride of Messiah should be the greatest priority in our life. To be with Yeshua, serving him forever. Are you being faithful during your betrothal? Many are called, few are chosen, but few are faithful. And remember, in the Bible, there is no such thing as divorce, but you can break a betrothal. If there's, if the one party in the betrothal is not faithful, a betrothal can be cut off, but a marriage cannot be cut off. Time for the bride to come out of the bridal chamber and prepare for the wedding ceremony. So I pray that you are all working on this and getting ready, because every day we go to bed, and every time the sun sets and a new sun comes out, we are one day closer to that kingdom. Yahweh bless. Hatzimah.